Bam, 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 bam.
Welcome once again to New Game Plus. You are listening to a retro gaming podcast where three guys spend 7 days playing one old game and then we talk about it. My name's Dustin.
My name's Kenny.
Pew! I'm Nolan.
Yes, the energy. And this is episode 130. To commemorate the console's upcoming 30th anniversary, Sega unveiled its own miniature classic edition version of the legendary 16-bit Genesis, or what the rest of the world calls the Mega Drive. Did you guys hear about this?
That's a really unique idea.
To commemorate.
You don't have to be the first.
No, they're no, jumping on the bandwagon.
Which is fine.
It's totally
That's what
fine.
Everyone else does in life.
No,
that's
here,
fine.
It's super fine. It's so fine that, let me tell you, I'd get that over a SNES classic.
Well, yeah, because that was your...
That was mine,
that was your
yeah.
system, yeah. yeah. So it will first be released, obviously, in Japan, but then to the rest of the world later this year. So
that's not
far away. So so far, we don't know much about it. We don't know what games will be included, but...
Which is everything.
If the Sega team were coming to ask our opinion on what Sega classics Ooh. Must be included on the system,
Dang.
What games would we submit?
Here's the thing. A lot of them are just crossovers from SNES. They're
sure.
you know, ports.
So they're going to have to do Sega specific, you know?
Yeah, it's going to have Vector Man on it.
Okay, so Sonics, right? I mean,
right. absolutely. Yeah, that was going to be my answer,
because I don't care.
But it was the easy one.
Vector Man will be on there, but who cares? Because Vector Man's... You either love them or you hate them.
What about some of the ones we played? We played Genesis specific. Toe Jam and Earl. You think it'd make it?
Is it Genesis specific?
Yeah.
Maybe. It was a big enough game.
Not do you think it will make it? Are we submitting it when they come and ask us?
No.
Of the ones we've played, I would put Guardian Heroes on there.
Comic Zone?
We got to get Roadkill to the masses.
Dang.
Gunstar Heroes, do you remember with the different gun combos?
Yes.
That absolutely. Has to be on there. That has to be
I
on
forgot
there.
That They'll was a Genesis job. Game.
It's gonna have all the good Sonic games, and that's all that matters. Like, it'll have Sonic and Knuckles, 1, 2, 3.
I want to go back Sonic and play game. Gunstar Heroes now.
It'll be on there. Something. They'll do a good job.
Well, unfortunately, no one's asking us. Like, we don't have the power to select any of these games. But if we get lucky and all of our games that we suggested end up on the console, that would truly be out of this world. Which just so happens to be where our retro game of the week is taking us.
Well segued.
Join us on our trip to Mars as we talk all about Commander Keen and Invasion of the Vorticons.
Overview.
Commander Keen in Invasion of the Vorticons is a three-part episodic side-scrolling platform video game, which is a mouthful. So we'll break that down just a little bit. So it is a three-part episodic, which means there's really three games kind of in this one initial game. It's really most, I think, fans would consider Commander Keen 1, 2, and 3 kind of right here in Invasion of the Vorticons. It's a side-scrolling platformer, which you're going primarily left to right, but you're going up and down as well, and that's a big part of this game, to collect certain items to get to the end of the stage and then move on to the next stage. So it was released, though, for the PC in 1990, which is interesting because a lot of these earlier platformers were on consoles, not on the PC, because there was a lot of, and we'll discuss this, there was a lot of issues trying to get the PC hardware to work in accordance with what some of the other consoles were doing. It was published by Apogee Software and developed by Ideas from the Deep. And Ideas from the Deep might not be familiar to you, but you might be more familiar with who they became. So Ideas from the Deep was a small group of developers who became commonly referred to as id Software.
John and Romero, baby.
Yeah, we've talked about them on our podcast. These guys became like the masterminds of earlier video game development. So Wolfenstein 3D and Doom, which became mainstays and forerunners in the 3D shooting environment, was created by these guys, but those weren't the first games that they created. They worked together first to create this, Commander Keen and Invasion of the Vorticons, which they developed in 3 months.
Whoa, three really? Months.
Yeah. Dang. They were working at another organization, Softdisk, I believe, and they figured out, one of the guys figured out, I think John Carmack figured out that he could do this side-scrolling thing that hadn't been done on PCs really before, and so they just started working on their own thing. They would take the company computers home, they would work on it together, they'd spend all night. So 3 months they developed this, and then as soon as it went live and they got their first check, they all quit. They all quit working at Softdisk so that they could continue this because it was just an incredible success. So the story is all about Billy Blaze. He is an 8-year-old genius who built a spaceship out of modified household items.
I love that premise.
Do you remember what he named it?
It was what, the bacon and beans?
Beans with bacon?
The something? Bean with bacon mega rocket.
Why?
Yeah.
That's so great.
He dons his brother's football helmet and calls himself Commander Keen. And so he gets in that rocket ship and he flies to Mars and meets a lot of Martians while there, but also this alien species known as the Vorticons. As soon as he lands, they steal parts of his ship. And so you, as Commander Keen, have to go through the various caves and fortresses of the Vorticons and of the Martians to retrieve your ship's parts in order to make it back home safely to Earth before your parents come and check on you in your room. It is 3 episodes, so although the story begins there, it doesn't conclude there. Little Billy ends up having to save Earth and slay all of the Vorticon population on their home planet as well. But we don't want to give any spoilers to this almost 30-year-old game, so we'll go ahead and stop there.
Isn't it crazy, though, that id Software, a company known for making pretty gory and adult games, made a kids game first?
Yeah, and very childish, like with the character, with the alien designs, with the story. You know, it's like very empowering to young kids to use their imagination, I feel like.
Well, what's crazy about this, and you mentioned it, but like, I don't know if anyone will really grasp this, but like the IBM computers that they were using to like do this were not able to replicate like the processing power of the that consoles were using. Like, apparently when they tried to do it, like, it was very laggy and very like it wasn't a smooth scroll. And the fact that he figured out how to do this, John Carmack.
Well, yeah, like, computers during this time could only redraw each new screen, like, completely. Yeah. So if you're thinking of some of the early Super Mario games, like, think when it would cross from the... it didn't do this in those games. I'm just trying to think of scrolling games. Like, when you go to... it's kind of, like, limited. Like, there's a wall on the left side and the right side. And when you pass that right wall, it then has to redraw the entire next section until you get to that right wall again. Well, if you think of Super Mario Brothers 3 or something like that, and I'm referencing that because that's what they recreated with this scrolling ability, with this hardware accelerated scrolling is what it's technically called. And they did it for the PC, and they tried to pitch it to Nintendo so that they could get a PC port of Super Mario Brothers 3, but Nintendo didn't go for it. But it did offer this new kind of way to do platforming for the PC that makes it so much more accessible and enjoyable for gamers.
Did you see that Softdisk was based in Shreveport, Louisiana?
I did see that. That's
pretty funny.
That's crazy.
Yeah, I love how innovative they were. Like, even with the 3D games that they made, like with Doom and with Wolfenstein 3D, it was like jank 3D, like before true 3D, but it still worked. Like, I love these guys. It's a cool company. Yeah.
They're pioneers. What I really respect about this team is that they tried things that weren't being done. And yeah, there's there's inherent issues with the first that always tries that. But we are where we are with like 3D shooters and with platformers and with PC platformers and with all of these other things because you had these guys that tried it first.
Can you guys imagine how different gaming would look in general if instead of id going off and doing their whole thing, if Nintendo had been like, sure, we'll do PCs now.
That'd be crazy.
Oh my goodness.
Both you wouldn't have like Doom and Wolfenstein and things that defined like PC gaming to a big degree. I mean, these guys were heavily influential. Other people were doing it. It's not like, you know, it'd be an insane shift, but it would have made a difference. And Nintendo like getting into that space would have completely disrupted all of the models. I don't know. I don't even know how to imagine it.
Gameplay.
I think the first thing to talk about with gameplay, in my opinion, is the overworld. That's kind of unique.
For sure it is. Especially like considering the hurdles that we just mentioned that they had to overcome, like you start out on an overworld, a top-down view, a map kind of the world, and you can move and then enter levels that way. So like you're visiting that overworld view after each level. And so it's kind of like it's your navigation port, which was very unexpected for me.
And it's interesting. I think I may have mentioned it, but you don't have to play every stage. So you, like technically you can go to these different images of like a cave or of a city or something or fortress, and then you click a button and you enter into that stage. So you can choose what order you go in, you can choose which ones you go to, and then like I mentioned, you don't even have to go to all of them.
To some degree. I mean, there's unpassable ones, and then there's all of the ones that have items you need to complete your spaceship. And so though some of it's mix-up order, some of the little ones are passable. I feel like there's more like faux freedom there than there is actual freedom.
Yeah, maybe. I think you've got some flexibility in the order in which you do things.
There's certainly some optional areas.
Definitely more than there should be in a game this old and this format.
Each stage is relatively basic, though. You select the level to enter, and then you are platforming through the level, trying to avoid enemies, trying to get these keys to unlock doors. In most of the stages, you've got like a yellow door and or a red door, I think. And so the yellow key to unlock that one, red one to unlock the red door. And you're getting the parts to your ship. And once you get all the parts to your ship, you take off. So that's at least what you're doing in the first episode of Commander Keen in Invasion of the Vorticons.
And you're also collecting things. Can we talk about that? I don't know if I've ever figured that out.
Like the Earthside items? Yeah, you wouldn't know what's happening unless you press F1 maybe or do something at the beginning thing. To see. Because it's got a list of those. Those are simply just points.
Well, okay, yeah, I figured. And I love that you collect soda that's totally Pepsi. But turned that you can't see the logo, totally, but you can Pepsi. See a P.
No, and it's red clearly the Pepsi can. And like the nostalgic early 90s Pepsi can that's just so classic.
That's great.
So you get a list and it's just for points. You do have at the end of the game or when you die, you can put in your initials and get high score and all that. But at a certain point values, you get an extra life. So that's why you would want to collect those. But you do have lollipops and a whole lot of them. Pepsi, soda, pizza, books, and teddy bears. Those are the kind of different Earthside items that you can find.
Very lore friendly with the teddy bears.
They kept everything as like kid kind of items. It followed the story really well.
So when you beat those levels and you return to that overworld, just kind of wrap that up, I love how it just covers up the level that you were just on with a giant square that says done. So you know which ones you've completed.
I didn't check. Can you go back and play those? I'm sure, right?
I don't know. I didn't try because I didn't want to go back when I
because it was done. I don't know either.
Yeah, because I was done.
There's a few times though that you could miss some kind of secret or need points to unlock more lives or whatever else to where it there might be justification to go back. I'm curious. I never tried either.
I doubt it would let you.
then that just even further justifies my decision to try and be a really, really, really strict completionist in this game. Am I the only one who ran into that desire?
To get all the little collectibles?
Every single item. I wanted
no.
it all.
No way.
No.
There's too many.
Yeah, I realized early on that that was not even my goal, and I knew this game from being a speedrunning game and a pretty quick one, so you don't, like, it's a relatively short game if you are just playing the stages that you need to play and just, and you know where each of the items are.
And it's a relatively medium-length game if you die sometimes while you're figuring things out. Especially some of the really questionable design things that are punishing if you're exploring for the first time.
Like what?
And also trying to collect every last item.
What were some of the questionable things you're talking about?
Oh, there's things that like happen off screen. Like, for example, I think of one hidden area where you have to fall down into it, but don't see what's under you as you fall, and there's a fire right under you. That's one of those things that's like, first time you go down this, it's going to take a life for you to learn that you have to dodge this thing. And there were other things like that that just felt, I don't know, a little cheaper, a little gimmicky to me, that were kind of punishing, that I wish they'd done differently in how they like designed levels. But overall, it wasn't so much that it was like unbearable.
So it is one hit kill. So
right.
You get hit by an alien or you fall into a fire or into a like pit of spikes or whatever these things might be. You instantly lose your life and you start back at the beginning of the stage.
Yeah, almost all of them. There's a few of the aliens that instead of killing you, just like knock
push you
back.
Yeah, I was going to say it.
Will often push you off a cliff or into an obstacle or make you, you know, deal with them. But there's at least a couple that aren't going to just kill you, or you're going to have to just like creatively platform around or deal with them.
Which I kind of respect that because I think, and I think most of those are like the baby Martians, which the Martians are not the aliens that you're necessarily angry with. It's the Vorticons, you know, it's those kind of wolf-like creatures.
The Nasus creatures.
Those what?
Nasus.
League of Legends reference.
Oh.
Since all of our viewers will know it, obviously.
No, I'm with you, Kenny.
A good one to make.
The dog hero.
Yeah, the giant dog human.
Egyptian dog guy. Yeah.
Egyptian god alien things that were terrible.
And moving on. It's the little baby Martians that don't necessarily do damage to you. They kind of just push you, which, so I think that works.
And they're cute. Cute enough that he took one home with.
Yeah, they are.
Right. At the end of the first episode, Mom's like, what is this green alien? And he's like, Mom, can I keep it, please?
We'll talk about it in the morning. It's like the end of a sitcom episode.
It is. Yeah. And then you hear the bass line.
Yeah, the Seinfeld. Yeah.
So we didn't talk. We haven't really talked about the mechanics. We haven't talked about the two infamous items when it comes to Commander Keen and what helps this be a somewhat unique platformer. So one less so than the other. So I'll do the lesser one and then one of you can hit the iconic one.
Dibs.
But you do get a gun early on, and then you can pick up rechargeable ammo for it. And unfortunately, so you only use control and alt in this game. You use control to jump, you use alt to do what one of them are going to talk about, and then you press both of them together, which is unfortunate, to fire this ray gun that you get. It's pretty powerful, takes out some enemies in one hit, and later episodes it might take two or even three, or some can't even be killed by your ray gun. Nice. But there is rechargeable ammo that's located throughout the levels.
I don't know a ton about Commander Keen. Are you talking about the pogo stick being the other iconic thing?
Absolutely.
I called dibs.
Okay.
And then he dropped it like he doesn't even know if it's what we're going to talk about.
No, Kenny, like,
the pogo stick is the best thing in the whole game.
It is. Yeah, I agree. That's what makes this platformer different than some of the others.
I mean, it's just a high jump, y'all.
Well, yeah, but a classy, lore-friendly high jump.
Yeah,
that you can toggle on and off, that takes a little bit of skill to use, and that's just really cool looking.
Yeah, so I mean, it pogos you way higher than your normal jump, so you need it at certain points to navigate. I didn't know that was an iconic thing of Commander Keen, though.
Oh, yeah. So you get it in one of the early stages in episode one,
yeah.
But in every other episode, four, five, six, all of the other Commander Keens, that's the mainstay. Like, that's what's iconic with Commander Keen and what makes it a unique platformer. You don't really use it as a weapon. You just use it to navigate around these levels, and it gives you access to higher things, or it allows you to go through the stage in a unique way, maybe even avoiding a lot of other enemies or obstacles.
Yeah. The level design certainly happened with you having the pogo stick in mind, which is fine because it gives you the pogo stick fairly early. Although my first playthrough of the kind of one optional level that you can get the pogo stick before or after, I hadn't gotten the pogo stick yet and was trying to full clear the level. And there were all these items you just literally couldn't get to. And it was really, really frustrating for me. And so then when you discover the pogo stick and realize what it does, I was kind of salty about it.
I like how they introduced the pogo stick. Like in that one level where it's at the top of that pyramid, and then if you jump higher, you get more of the level. It's like dark up there.
Yeah.
Like, I did not know that you could go higher up.
There was a secret area in that area.
I mean,
point. At least my first playthrough either.
Yeah.
No one's hating on this pogo stick, Kenny.
I'm not hating on it. I don't know a lot about this game. I know it's kind of a well-known franchise, but I don't know anything about it.
I mean, it's a pogo stick. I don't know how you can hate on it. Outside of this game specifically.
You have history with pogo sticks.
I kind of think Nolan was like born as a 14-year-old and just didn't have a childhood. Because you ought to be fond of pogo sticks.
But
just
he's also
on their
younger,
own
so he probably
no,
razored
had a pogo
around.
Stick.
He didn't pogo like
that. I was bad at it and didn't really think they were that great.
You had a razor? Did you have a razor?
Heck yeah. I had a razor scooter. I had a pogo stick, but I got a skateboard and I was like, all this other stuff is super lame.
Okay. I don't think either of you did because, Dustin, you talked age. Do you guys remember moon boots at all?
No.
Yeah.
Those were the best.
I don't really remember what they did.
It's super dangerous.
I'm also thinking of this huge like boxing glove type thing that you would wear on your hands, and they're just circular and
boppers.
Is that what they're called? They're just huge cushions that you hit your brother with.
Yeah, put air, you blow them up with air. Yeah, they're called sock'em boppers. They're awesome.
We're just we
nostalgia bomb.
Devolve this podcast into just talking about early 90s.
I mean,
like,
we
trinkets.
Say it devolved, but I feel like it's pretty natural coming out of Commander Keen, because like not only is it way nostalgic on like the early PC feel, which I don't know, you guys probably missed a little bit of this, but like I played this game as a kid. Like I did gaming when DOS was still the main way to game. Not a lot. But I had enough of childhood into that I had some of those experiences. And so major nostalgia there. And then everything about this game is like references to childhood and then like fun real world items. And it's light and it's a ray gun and a pogo stick. And I feel like it's supposed to make you feel this way.
Sure. This game is all about stirring up nostalgia. And so either for the game itself, because it was kind of this early PC gaming era, or for kind of the time. And I feel like if you missed both of those, it makes it a difficult sell. And I know I'm probably jumping ahead of myself a little bit, but we're here talking about nostalgia and the gameplay, because that really is what I think a lot of the focus was here in the creation of this game. I don't know if you guys continued playing in some of the further episodes.
No.
Which are the Earth explodes and Keen must die.
That sounds bad.
I didn't get all the way through, but I did notice at the start of playing episode two, so the Earth explodes, that there was this huge difficulty spike. So episode one felt really easy for me, and I'm not even good at platformers, but the Earth explodes kind of spikes that up a little bit more with just, and the way that they did that, I didn't really care for just adding tons and tons of enemies in certain sections that it's almost impossible to get by them without losing a couple of lives.
That kind of follows the model though of how they were even putting out this game, which I think is important to talk about. We talked about some of the other really cool history, Carmack and Romero making the game and its influence and being an early PC title and some of the technical things they did. But one of the really common, or it may have been new at this point, but in the early 90s, one of the really common ways of releasing a game was to do it as shareware, which if yeah. you weren't around at that point, was simply they would take the first portion of a game, make it playable for free, and distribute it everywhere as much as they could in every way possible. Just try and get people to play your game. It was like piracy, but intentionally. Yeah, it was just hand it out. Like, you want a disc of the game? Sure. You like the game and want to give it to a friend? Do it. You get online and are interested in gaming at all, you're going to find a way to get it. And so they just like push that this game is free, everybody play it, with the hopes that some people would like it well enough that they'd go and then buy the rest of the game, which is what episode or part two and part three were. You would have to purchase those on a floppy disk that they'd mail to your house. And like, that was the way you played the rest of the game.
But I will say, just to the differences in each of the episodes, that it felt as though they only added like slight platforming mechanics, or it just modified a few things with each new episode. And that's one of the areas where I feel like they could have done more. With new episodes, I feel like you should always evolve or give us a little bit more, or maybe enhance or upgrade the pogo stick, or a different kind of firing option or something. And they didn't really do any of that. So it didn't feel like each episode was too totally different than the one previously, except for just the added difficulty. Right. And
yeah,
feel like they could have done a little bit more there.
You're really just unlocking the rest of the game. I think sure, they added like exactly. some moving platforms in and a couple of other tiny little things difference wise, but pretty much it was, if you liked this and want to do more of this, then you have to give us money. It wasn't DLC the way we think of it, where you're getting something new. It was just, hey, we gave you a taste of the game, now pay for it. All right, so we jumped ahead of ourselves and already talked about a lot of the ways this game aged, but let's do that officially.
Aged.
For enjoyment reasons, I have some issues with how it's played today. And I had to ask myself, like, is this a problem with the genre that it is? Is this a problem that I personally have with like platformers? And I was like, no, I love platformers, but it's kind of appropriate that we played this game on the week of 420, which, by the way, I don't smoke weed. I'm just making a joke, but this game tripped me out. Like, the look of it is so, well, first of all, the story, but then they followed through with that, with the look of the game being so like trippy. It's like pink and light blue and just weird looking. I don't know. It distracted me from being able to really, I don't know, focus on platforming.
They definitely went kiddie with the like visuals as well as the story. Like, they stayed on theme. And I mean, you can argue that any way you want. I think it works okay for the game, but it certainly isn't probably what a lot of us would go to as our first choice.
No, well, it's super interesting because it's clearly not Genesis, you know, with those clean, crisp, bright colors. It's clearly not Super Nintendo with even the look and feel of Super Nintendo.
No, I'll tell you what it is. It's MS Paint.
No, it's slightly better than that.
It's early PC, though. Like, it reeks of that.
It's early PC, but I think that the graphics for the game and for the theme, I think they're basic, but I think they work for this title. Same with the sound effects. I think they're basic, but I think they work for this title. And you got to remember that PC speakers at this time, you know, they were running, it was not ideal. And so sure. This game doesn't even have any music. So just get ready for just silence as you play outside of sound effects.
Right. Well, this is really, really simple sound effects, because this is gaming pre like support for sound cards, which is really the hardware that started letting people put in music and better, higher quality sound effects. You're talking like your computer is using its internal speaker to do some beeps of a certain type at the appropriate place. Well, like, that's how early this is.
You get sound effects for walking, which I hate because that gets old. Like, when you take a step, it's a loud sound effect. But still pretty impressive that, again, this was made on a system that wasn't meant to, that it wasn't meant to be played on, and they made it functional and feel like a true game. So that, I definitely have to keep that in mind in this section, if I have any qualms about the enjoyment of it or how it's played, because I'm still like appreciative that those guys innovated and pioneered this, you know, this platform.
I think the thing that ages most for me is the handling. Like, yeah. I feel like that is what's aged most. So Commander Keen's movements aren't as fluid as they can be, or in my opinion, should be, which makes platforming difficult. We've talked about this before, but with platforming, you need precise inputs. Yeah. And so they give you a little flexibility on making some of the platforming not as difficult as other platforming games. But for example, for Commander Keen to jump, he comes to a complete stop. He does an animation where his knees bend and then he jumps. And so you can't do really fluid, like running, jumping. You've got to run and then you've got to like maybe even tiptoe to the edge of a platform yeah. so that you can then successfully jump across. And then it's near impossible to do a jump one direction and then immediately jump the other direction, especially when you're on the pogo stick. So I think a lot of that handling is really, really foreign and stuffy for today.
I agree. But you know what, Dustin? I actually, once I got used to it, it helped me, because when you land, he kind of grips the platform if you don't put any inputs in. So on those really precise ones, like, it's super obnoxious and not natural for a platformer, but I would like use that grippy mechanic to not fall or slide off. But yeah, I mean, the yeah. fact that I had to get used to that just speaks to how janky right. it is.
It could definitely work in your favor. I just don't think it feels familiar to what sure. platformers are doing more in a modern sense.
Yeah, yeah. it definitely didn't feel like platforming on a console. And I think PCs got better about this. But even that piece very much felt like, you know, PC platforming. And I don't want to give it too hard a time, because I agree it was janky. But yeah, you could master it, and it was at least consistent. You had really good control of your jumps. You could actually affect some of your jump mid jump. And so it gave you the ability to learn how to do it really well. And so it wasn't super like fluid, but it was something that you could learn and then feel like, okay, I've mastered this game. So I think it felt poor, but it was implemented well. I don't know.
So Commander Keen in Invasion of the Vorticons is relatively easy to get your hands on today, especially the first episode, because we mentioned it's shareware. You can even go to archive.org and be able to play that in browser if you want. A lot of the Commander Keens are available in Steam. And if you just can't get enough of this series, you can check out Billy Blaze and other games, including Commander Keen in Keen Dreams, Commander Keen in Goodbye Galaxy, and Commander Keen in Aliens Ate My Babysitter.
Whoa. We're getting into the Doom territory with that one. Is that the last one?
I think in episode 3 of Invasion of the Vorticons, you go to their home planet and you are killing their kids while they're in school and different things like that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, like you're okay. slaughtering all of the Vorticons on their home planet. Dude. Mothers, children, all of these things.
Here's the
not
deal.
Not cool.
For as much as you guys are saying not cool, I know some of your favorite literature involves a child protagonist that commits xenocide against an alien race.
And so feels bad about it and tries
so
to bring him back.
So my Ender's Game fans need to back off my boy Billy Blaze. He might not have known what was up. He might have felt like he was defending the human race. We don't know what's in his head.
We are speakers. We are not xenocides.
Gosh. That's true, though.
Final thoughts.
So do you give this game your vote for New Game Plus status? That's our general thumbs up or thumbs down. It requires 2/3 of the vote to swing one way or the other. Kenny, let's begin with you.
Yeah, so this game's not perfect. There are a couple of just tech hurdles, most specifically the lack of sound or the lack of music and the really, really early basic sound effects are going to be a hard pill for a lot of people to swallow. But this is so emblematic of a really unique era in PC gaming, hit enough nostalgia buttons for me that were really fun, and has enough really interesting story to go along with the development that I know isn't playing the game itself, but that I found really fascinating in terms of not just the development of this game, but sort of subsequent games, and it really being sort of a kickoff in gaming history that I think, coupled with the fact that I had fun playing the game, that I'm going to, again, with the suggestion that you hit that mute button, say that this is a game worth most people playing, at least most people who are interested in retro gaming. So for me, it's a new game plus status. Thumbs up.
You just need to mute the game. Also, close your eyes, and this game is awesome.
Hey, I'm sticking with it.
Yeah, I respect it, but I disagree with it. So the game, I really love that you can tell that this was their first game because, like, you can tell they were younger, not because of the kiddie vibe, but because they put their company's name at certain points in the game. Like, in the first level at the top, you can see it says id, and some of the Coke cans later in the game spell id. So I think it's, I agree with Kenny. I love the backstory to how this game was developed, and I'm glad they did it because it spawned a company that ended up pushing the boundaries even further with PC gaming. However, I don't think this game's playable today. I think it's too old. It's too blocky. It's too hard to control. And your sprite doesn't look like a kid. It looks like a man that is balding. So no new game plus.
Specifically for the balding sprite.
That's, yeah, I had a major issue.
That's one yes, that's one no. And I'll say to you guys, I don't know. This is a tough one for me. In fact, I didn't, so most of these games, I have made my decision before we come in to record our episode. There are a few throughout the history of this podcast where I have been wavering and then made my decision as we've discussed. And so this is one of those times. I had some fun this week. I was amazed at some of the stuff that this game has going for it, especially being a 1990 PC title. I, along with Kenny, love some of the story of its development. I think it's so interesting. I think that this game really strived to do some unique things with the overworld, with the optional stages, with the option of going which stage at what time. The pogo stick is huge, although Nolan has little respect for it. But it's just not a remarkable platformer in my mind. I think it did great things for PC platforming, and so I think it should be respected for that, and it should be recognized and known. But I don't think in and of itself it's a great game. It's a fine game, but it's not a great game, and so I'm going to reserve my vote and say that it's not New Game Plus status worthy, which means that it received two votes in the negative. So Commander Keen in Invasion of the Vorticons is not New Game Plus certified. And I think this is a game that's going to have split audiences. I don't think anyone's necessarily going to be a hardcore one way or the other, like hardcore, but right, are going to be able to, some will respect it for the nostalgia reasons, and some will just not like it for its modern standards, or just like, did it hold up for today? So some of our viewers actually wrote in, they had their own thoughts or opinions. So let's read them now.
Yeah.
Jan wrote in, he said, "So it seems I got lucky and my game was picked. When all my friends had Segas and Nintendos, I played games on a PC. And one of the games I played was Commander Keen. In my mind, it looked cool and played as well as Super Mario. And although the physics are a little bit clunky, it's a lot nicer to play than similar titles at the time. I had hours of fun with it. And the smooth scrolling they pulled off was also quite unique. Does it still hold up though? I'm not sure. The controls are still a bit clunky. I still like it, but that's probably because of nostalgia reasons. So I can't decide whether it should get my NGP vote. I'll leave it up to you guys to decide. If you like 1, 2, and 3, then you'll absolutely love 4, 5, and 6. P.S. The symbols you see in the game can be translated, so it's not some random gibberish. It's called the Standard Galactic Alphabet.
I don't know if you guys had realized that, but I knew that and thought it was a super cool thing to include in the game. And lots other secret bonus side areas, too. I don't know. They just did some cool, like, next level stuff.
I think it would have been a lot cooler if you could have interpreted it in game. I saw a sign early on, and I think Keen maybe even made a reference of, like, I can't understand this. I wish I could. I wish that at some point you could have gotten a translator or something in game so that you could then go back and read all those signs.
That'd be neat. Yeah, there's something particularly, I always struggle with that word, nostalgic about PC games. I don't know. Compared to console games, like I think about Magic School Bus for me, which was a edutainment game on the PC that I had. I have some really nostalgic and fun memories. So I can totally see how returning to this game, if you've played it as a kid, would be just like amazing. But hopefully we helped Jan land on a decision that it's probably too janky for today.
Yeah. Thanks for writing in. Antonin also sent in an email, said, I love DOS platformers and this one brought me back, way back. I enjoyed using my keyboard to make the commander jump around, and probably the best part of the game was the pogo stick and its fantastic jump. However, despite its amazing environment and overworld map, I did not find myself enthusiastic about playing through the game. The biggest problem for me has been distinguishing which enemies make damage and how. Some enemies simply push, others hurt to touch, and others will shoot lasers. Some enemies follow on a predestined path, and others will follow you. And worst of all, some enemies cannot be killed, some cannot be shot, and some cannot be jumped on. The variations on how to approach an enemy made it really difficult to seamlessly jump through the level without having to stop and reconsider strategy constantly. And that just didn't really vibe with me. So despite the game being really awesome, I'm personally not too keen on it.
Okay. But hey, look, we're talking about id legends, right? But MJ didn't dunk from the free throw line on his first try.
Yeah, Michael Jackson took a long time. What?
Jordan did not dunk from the free throw line his first try. And we ended up with some classic games.
And so, I would say in defense of a game that I didn't give my vote, you only had a few options of how to give enemy variations, you know, back in the day.
Yeah.
And I feel like outside of just changing character sprite and animation, they had to do something like this. And so I'm not too opposed to it. Thank you guys for sending in your thoughts, though. Each and every week, please send us your thoughts on the game that we're playing. Play it along with us, send us your thoughts, or if it's just a game you have fond or terrible memories of, let us know. ngppodcast@gmail.com. It's the time of the episode to set Commander Keen in Invasion of the Vorticons aside and to randomly select our new retro game of the week from our massive retro master list, which you can submit new games to. It just has to be 15 years old or older, any console, any genre. Randomly selecting now. We talked about some of the puzzle elements in Commander Keen. Well, this week we are going to actually be playing a straight up puzzle video game. We haven't done that in a while.
It has been a good minute.
This was published in 1989 by California Dreams. Came out first on the arcade and then a couple years later on the Mega Drive, the Genesis. It is a logical extension of Tetris, taking it into the third dimension. That's right. We are going to be playing the ultimate 3D mind teaser, Block Out.
Huh. An arcade puzzle game. That's a unique combo.
Sounds kind of fun.
Yeah.
I love Tetris.
I think the shapes start close to you and then they go horizontally away from you and you have to place. I'm going to be terrible at this game.
That sounds interesting.
I'm going to be terrible at this game, but it does look like an arcade title that some of those Japanese kids would be phenomenal at.
Oh, yeah.
Have you seen some of them on like Dance Dance, like Revolution, and games like that, where they're just godlike. I feel like this is another one of those.
Go to twitter.com/NGP podcast. Look at our pinned tweet. Click on the Discord link next to the castle emoji and join us in Discord.
And then go to patreon.com, look up New Game Plus podcast, and give us some money.
Jeez. Straight into the point.
I was following tone that no
I like
one
it.
Set
Keep
up.
It going. Don't no, change it now.
Yeah. If you do, you will get a shout out on every episode, just like our producer level supporters, Bradley, Zion, Gimbarino. Thanks for your support.
That's kind of the truth, kind of not, but we don't have time to go into it now. Also, go to facebook.com/NGP podcast if you would like. YouTube, you'll have to search for us, but we've got regular video content up there. Listen to us directly on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, Google Music, or any other podcast provider of your choice except Spotify, and you will be the first to get new NGP episodes, which are edited and produced by our friend Tom Tate. Join us next week as we play Block Out. Until then, I'm still Dustin.
I'm still on that pogo stick.
Ew, and I'm Nolan.
And Nolan still cares nothing about the pogo stick.
No.
And this has been New Game Plus.